Hey, welcome to Rethink Podcast. Today I'm here with my friend Sean Johnson. A lot of y'all know him. He's the lead pastor down at Red Rocks Church, which is just a great sister church here in Denver. And together we're trying to take ground.
Man,
how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for letting me come hang out.
Yeah, well, it's an honor. And you're like a big deal.
Oh, stop.
No, this is a really, really needed resource in the church today. I used to say I always taught the best sermon on depression in the church because I never heard anybody else even talk about it.
Yep.
So mine was the only one.
Right.
But this is, I've read it and I read through it and it comes from a really, really tender spot in your life.
Yeah.
And that's probably, we knew of each other.
Yep.
You know, but a couple of years ago when I went on sabbatical and you were one of the first like text messages and I don't even know how you heard about it. Just like through the,
I remember I was in the gym.
Yeah.
And somebody on our team had heard about it. You know, people just talk
in church world,
right? You get that?
They probably shared it.
It was a prayer request.
It was a prayer request.
Yeah. And so somebody heard, reached out to me, and I don't remember. I think somehow I had gotten your number many years before we had met once.
Maybe.
And so I remember I was in the gym when I heard, and I was just like instantly like, I just remember going, man, I know we don't know each other well, but I know the pressures I feel.
Yeah.
And I know how bad it is, how hard it is for me and how alone I feel in it.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to reach out and go, man, if I can ever do anything. And I felt weird texting you because I'm like, we're not like best friends, but I just like wanted you to know.
I just like, great.
Yeah.
Because I was curled up in a ball.
I get it.
It wasn't until I was getting ready to come back several months later that I dug that out, because in the middle of my sabbatical, right towards the end of it, I found out this all starts coming to light. And I remember because I invited you for my comeback weekend here at Flatirons, and you came back and sat on the front row with Jill, and thank you for that. It's like, I need some friendly faces out there.
Man, it was an honor. And, you know, I've told you this before, but ever since we started Red Rocks Church, we have looked up to you guys. And even long before we ever knew each other, we were always watching you going, you know, what should we do next? How do we do this? And one of the first things we would always ask is, how does Flatirons do it? We've always just considered you guys like our big brother.
Well, it's mutual, because I think a lot of people jump back and forth because we share very similar mission and passion, right? And you come from the Bible Belt. I come from the Bible Belt, right? This doesn't happen. Churches are in competition with one another. I've never sensed that.
Yep.
So we're cheering you on as well.
And I was blown away and humbled and really excited when you invited us to come hang out with you here, because I was like, he's not that. Because I felt, you know, you feel that when the church starts to do well, which we obviously had nothing to do with, but you start to feel that from other people and other churches, like there's this competition thing. And I always hated it.
Yeah.
Never wanted to be a part of it, but I could tell sometimes it's real. Yeah.
But when I heard that you went on sabbatical, then I knew you were safe to reach out to, because nobody understands. And we're going to get into this in a minute. But I remember reached out to you and said, hey, let's meet. And we met downtown at Snooze.
Yeah.
And we sat at a table eating breakfast. And there's like two grown men crying. And I said, the waiter thought we were breaking up or 100%. Something like that. But
I could tell everyone was like, are those two okay?
Okay. They're going through something.
We got some stuff going on.
Yeah. But really, not to be condescending or anything, but you and I both sit in positions, and there's some people watching that sit in unique positions that nobody really understands what they carry.
Yeah.
And to be the lead pastor at Red Rocks, or to be the lead pastor at Flatirons, whatever, that sounds like you've arrived.
Yeah.
Your life is great.
Yeah.
But it's heavy.
Yeah.
And I would say, because I talk to a lot of young pastors, I know you do the same thing, the number one word that I'm hearing from pastors is lonely.
All the time.
Right?
All the time.
So I want to talk about that because you're supposed to be super Christian, super leader. You're supposed to have all the answers, right? You get up there and inspire. And you can be a little transparent, but as long as it has a bow on the end of it, right?
Yep.
And that can lead to, why do you think that is?
Man, you know, I remember telling my wife when we were about to start the church, and I didn't grow up in a Christian household. I didn't grow up a Christian at all. I got saved later in life. And I was like, I can't believe I'm going to be a pastor. And one of the things that scared me to death about being a pastor was, I was telling my wife, I'm like, babe, I can't pretend that I'm perfect. Like, I'm so far from it, and I don't have the energy. Like, I can't pretend that I don't have issues and that I don't struggle. And I think there is this like pressure because I talk about God, I've just got to be pretty close to perfect mm-hmm. in order to do so. And, but I think, and you know, you tell me what you think, but I have noticed it is not just us pastors. It's people who just believe in Jesus or go to church or have faith or have been in church for a while. I think they also feel this added pressure of, especially if you're dealing with things like anxiety or depression or whatever, of like, well, I can't share that.
Right.
Because then I'm not a very good Christian, or I must not have good faith, or I got to play the game. And then what happens is I find that people start coming to church and that's the place where you do the most pretending.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to coming to church going, I'm really, really broken and I need, you know, help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's sad, but I do think there's this pressure of putting on an act of being stronger than you really are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you and Jill go into ministry together going, okay, we have to be real mm-hmm. and authentic, right? Mm-hmm.
But exactly.
And that's a big but, right? That's mm-hmm. a big but. Yeah. We can all say, we're going to go into this, we're going to be real and raw and real and all this kind of stuff. But then you're the leader, right? And
how broke do I want to let these people know that I am?
Right. There's a certain level of brokenness that you reveal that people are going, that's inspiring. Look how strong he is. Okay. But if they knew the level,
then they're like, oh, I'm out.
Yeah. Okay. You can be a little broken. Don't pull over on the side of an interstate and have a nervous breakdown and have to come be rescued by your wife and her friends. Right. Which is in your story.
Right.
Yep. Right. And that's one of the first stories you told me.
Yep.
And I'm like, I get it. You know, I get it. That's a little much.
Yeah.
Don't go into an inpatient facility for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what crazy people do, not our pastor.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
But this is the journey you've been on for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about what led up to that. Right. I mean, you cover a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and here's what I mean by that. Cause I'm looking back at my pre-sabbatical
mm-hmm.
and the conversations that were going on in my head that I wasn't letting people in on.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
No, 100%.
So you have this anxiousness and you're able to
stuff it down,
stuff it, hide it, camo mm-hmm. it, whatever that is. Okay. And as you're feeling this tension of the pressure of leadership and the pressure of anxiety and depression mm-hmm. and fear and all that, you're living in that. What's going on in your head all day long? And I'm going to say it's constant, but it just rears its head.
As we've talked, we just understand this because we've been in it. Every time the church would have one of those little growth spurts, I would feel more pressure, not more excitement, because I would feel like I'm so broken on the inside. And I would tell the church I deal with this stuff, but I knew I couldn't tell them the depths of it, mm-hmm. or at least I didn't think I could. Mm-hmm. And so every time the church would grow, I'd feel like a little bit more nervous and a little bit more pressure, because now more people are watching me and I know how broken I feel on the inside. And so I kind of hid the depths of my anxiety for like 10 years. I was taking anti-anxiety medication. I was occasionally having panic attacks, trying to hide it as best I could.
What's the story you made up in your head that if they knew, what would happen?
Oh, it wasn't just the church. It was every relationship I had.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got a past and everyone's got a story. I grew up with this overwhelming thought on my mind all the time of, you're just not good enough.
Yeah, sure.
And so all my life, I felt like I was trying to be good enough and earn people's love and respect, even my wife's. Mm-hmm. And so what I thought is, if she knew the depths, if she knew that when everybody goes to sleep, I sometimes think about ending my life. Mm-hmm. How can I be her knight in shining armor?
Right.
Knights in shining armor don't do that.
Mm-mm.
And what if she would leave me and like my whole world would evaporate? What if she wouldn't think the same of me? What if my boys knew how bad I struggled? I want to be their hero.
Yeah.
I can't be their hero if they know the depths of it.
Wow.
If the church knew the depths of it, like you said, do I really want that guy as my pastor?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I start thinking about, well, now it's not just me.
You can say noble things like that from the stage, if you only knew.
Yeah. But the truth is, it's in your head. You're going,
no,
if you only knew.
If you only knew.
You know, and then all of a sudden you blink and you go, well, we have 100 staff members. And if I blow up this church because I share how much I'm hurting on the inside, it doesn't just affect me now. Now it affects a whole bunch of families.
They don't have health insurance.
Right.
Right.
And so you start carrying all that pressure. And the last couple years, I knew it was getting more and more, that the anxiety was getting more and more. I would never said it to anyone, but the thought I started having towards the end was, I know I can't keep going on this way.
You knew that.
I didn't know how it was going to end. I didn't know if I was going to end up making some huge mistake and just blowing it up, mm-hmm. or if I would just quit one day, or if finally someone would realize, like, he's jacked up. We need somebody else running this church. I just knew the way I'm living, the pain and angst I'm feeling on the inside, and trying to lead at the same time, I can't keep going like this for very long. That was the ever increasing thought.
So what kind of brought everything to light was that famous, I'm out on B470 or C4, it was one of the
470. C470, yeah.
One changes, of them, but, yeah. And you had to pull over, like panic.
Yeah.
Do you remember, was it an event? Was it a trigger? Was it, did the sudden start to spiral? Like, do you remember like what pushed it over the edge?
I didn't really explain this in the book because it's so embarrassing. And if whoever's watching, if you deal with anxiety and depression, you know, that thought of like what I feel, if I tell people how it's actually happening in my head, they'll think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
So one of the things that would trigger my anxiety was feeling stuck. It was almost like a claustrophobic, stuck in a situation, but I could be out on a boat in the middle of the ocean and I'd feel stuck and I'd feel claustrophobic and have a panic attack. Anything I couldn't control where I would feel stuck. And I've had many counselors unwind that back to childhood and all kinds of crazy things, right? So
this isn't the first couch you've been on.
Yeah, right. And silliest thing, I was at the dentist and I had they had to do like a cap on a tooth that I had broken. And when they put it on, I had this feeling in my head of like, I can feel it and it's irritating me. And I can't change that. It's the dumbest thing in the world. But I started feeling claustrophobic with it. And I'm driving home. And all of a sudden, I could feel it coming on. My skin starts tingling. My chest gets real tight. All of a sudden, I can't breathe. You know, I've had so many of these panic attacks. But for some reason, this one just, it was kind of like it just tipped. Everything just went kapoor. And I called Jill. And I was like, all I could say was pray for me. And she's like, can you make it home? And I was like, no. And I just fell apart. And by the time they got there,
I would love to interview her right now.
I wish we had video footage. Actually, I'm so glad we don't. I'm walking up and down the highway, crying, shaking. They show up. I'm like, guys, I quit. I can't be a pastor. I can't take the pressure. I can't do any of this. They took me home. And one of my friends was like, are you thinking about doing anything stupid? And of course, I knew the question he was asking. Yeah. And, I sat there for a few minutes and I was like, no, I'm fine. And then I sat there and I was like, here's the combo to my safe. Go get my guns. Like I had, go take my guns. Cause I was so bad. I was like, I can't trust me.
Right.
If I feel the way I feel right now tonight and I'm the only one up, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so it was to that point of like, I didn't think I could go on. I didn't think it would ever get better. Couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
So you had some great people in your life to go to. Chris Hodges, Craig, Jimmy, different people you refer to in there. It's like, but you have to make calls, right? So you're sitting there at your kitchen table and Jill's with you. I'm not 100%. Going anywhere, right?
Yep.
But now you have to make a decision whether you're going to do this again.
And I wanted to.
Of course you did.
I wanted to. In fact, the next morning I got up, didn't tell anybody except for the friends who knew and my wife. I got up the next morning and one of the guys I work with came over and I was like, I'll be okay. He's like, no, you're not okay. I'm like, I'll be okay. You know, yesterday was rough. Let's keep going to war. And our leadership team was like, bro, no, like you can't live this way. And I knew it. And I did. I made some really, really humbling, embarrassing phone calls. And the thing with those guys that you just mentioned, Pastor Chris and Pastor Craig are the only two people really that I would say that's my pastor. Mm-hmm. The truth is I want to impress them and I want them to think highly of me.
Yeah.
And I want them to think I'm a good pastor and a good man and a good leader. And it was really humbling to call them and go, I don't think I'm any of those things right now. And I'm really hurting and I don't know what to do. And that's, as you know, that's a tough call to make.
It is a tough call.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, because I didn't believe it at first, but the leaders in my life that said, you got to take a time out. You got to sit down. We're going to bench you. Right. In church world, that's code for we're moving you towards the door. We just don't want to say it to you because you've meant something to us. Right. They kept reassuring me from day one in the room we're sitting in right now, which I've totally remodeled because it's too traumatic. It was that intervention, right? Is that, hey, you need to take a break so that you can come back and lead. And I was like, I couldn't breathe at that point because all I saw was loss. Right. It took me several months that I actually started to believe that they wanted me back, that they were doing this. Right. Did you feel some of that? What did you sense was happening? Did you feel like it's over and it's a matter of time? Did you feel like, no, this is so that, did you have any that, sense
no,
of what?
That's a great question.
Because sometimes you don't even want to start the race if you know the race
it
ends in a
was, hole. For me, there was definitely a huge period where I was like, I'm not fighting to come back to be a pastor right now. I'm fighting to live my life in a normal fashion.
That's good.
If I never go work at a church again, I'll be fine. I really want to be a husband and a dad and a healthier person.
That's good.
And so that's where the fight started. I wasn't even thinking about the church for several weeks. I just couldn't. I didn't have the capacity. I was so, and so then there was definitely a point, you know, you mentioned it. I went into that long inpatient rehab thing where I, anxiety stuff, where I started going, maybe there's a chance that I could do this again. But what I knew is I had to do it different. I had to see it different because the way I was seeing my position and what I thought it meant I needed to be to people, be for people and do for, I couldn't keep doing that. And so what was really cool is being in that anti-anxiety counseling facility was I started having counselors on multiple times a week where we would just talk for hours about, okay, if you go back to being a pastor, let's try to see it differently. Let's try to take some of this pressure that you've put on yourself off. I was seeing some things real unhealthy. I had turned preaching and leading into somewhat of a performance. And I got real caught up in the social media. How many followers do I have? And what am I speaking at? And what am I not speaking at? And what kind of influence do I have versus what kind of, and it wasn't because I never felt like it was this really, I've always been a competitive person. We've talked about this. We're competitive people, but I just wanted to think I mattered. I wanted to think I was good at my job. I wanted to, and so I started measuring by all these metrics that aren't trustworthy.
Not at all.
And in my mind, I had decided that I'm just not doing very good at anything. And it,
therefore, I'm,
and it fueled my anxiety and depression. Sure did, right? Yeah. And so I had to stop trying to be someone I wasn't. There were times when I'm trying to preach like X, Y, and Z because they're so good at what they do. I mean, there are times when I would watch you online and be like, I want to talk more like Jim does.
Aim higher, buddy.
But I did. I had to just finally go, man, if I'm going to do this, first off, I'm going to tell the church everything. And if they want me, I'm here. And if they kick me out, I'll be happy with that decision. It'll probably be a lot less stress in my life. And that was honestly thanks to your advice. You're like, man, go tell them the truth. Go tell them everything. Because I had been given some advice to like, don't tell them everything because they might not trust you. And I had this like moment with God. And it was after we talked and I was like, man, I'm not trying to get people to trust me. I'm trying to get people to trust God.
There you go.
And Jim's advice, your advice was, man, tell him everything. And so I did. And I just told him everything. And I said, man, I'm better and I'm healthier and I'm stronger than I was. I'm still broken. I think we all are.
I think we should have the same counselor. Healthier.
That's right. That's exactly.
Healthier. Right?
Yeah. He had to tell me, stop saying get healthy. That's an unrealistic expectation. We don't do anything perfect till heaven. You're not looking for I'm healthy. You're looking for I'm healthier.
Yeah.
I'm better. I'm stronger. And I am those things, but I'm still a broke guy.
Yeah.
And I still deal with this stuff. I'm doing a lot better though.
Yeah, I know.
But there's so much freedom in telling the people I was trying to impress, telling the church, and then just giving myself permission to be me, good or bad.
You had to figure that who that was too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's hard to do because right? I've spent so long trying to be the mover and shaker. Yeah. And the truth is, like, man, I'm from Kansas. I'm not that eloquent.
The only person from Kansas who doesn't hunt.
I'm the only person from Kansas who's not a good hunter. I do have a truck. I pretend. I listen to country music. I pretend.
I grew up in Indiana. I don't play basketball.
What's wrong? You know, see, it's like,
something
yeah,
wrong with us.
Yeah. So, but no, just like, you know, I'm not that eloquent and I don't have a bunch of degrees in theology and, but I'm passionate about Jesus and I'm passionate about helping people. And I just had to finally go, man, it's okay to be me. And if there comes a time when being me doesn't work for this organization, that's okay. Mm-hmm. They can go another way or I'll go another way. But at least I'll have some peace and some confidence
that
in
mean
being
love
who
Red
God
Rocks,
called me to do. And, you know what I mean?
And, right. But you love Red Rocks and you
love it.
Being a leading and teaching and pastoring, right? Yep. So you said like when you went on sabbatical, when you're on break, like you didn't care about being a better pastor. You just wanted to be a better. And I love how you talk about Jill and your family. Yeah. You know, like that's, see, mine was a little bit different is I didn't know who I was. My whole identity was this place.
Yep.
Nickels and noses.
I felt that same thing.
So I didn't know. And so like I was a buzzsaw. I was telling people like, I got us here.
I will be back.
I will. Well, no, not even that. It's like, just do what I told you to do. You hitched your wagon to this guy. And then the inner conversation was, and he's not producing. Therefore, y'all think I'm failing. Got that from Harv, right? That shadow, dark shadow.
Yep.
But like it took me 2 months of my 6 months for God to pry this place out of my hands and say, this is not your church, Jim. This is my church. Yeah. And I stomped my foot and said, give me back my church.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's incredibly hard for us pastors, but I think it's probably for anybody who builds anything on their own. It's hard not to get your self-worth from something that you're a part of that's doing well.
Mm-hmm. And if God's good, he'll take it away from you. And that's painful, isn't it?
About 3 weeks into this journey, I had a real sad week and it was the realization that the church is working just fine and I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that sucks. But I needed that. I needed to separate my who I am. I was getting so much of my value in life because numbers at a church when I can't even control that.
You know, there's a day coming at Red Rocks and at Florence where there's going to be conversations and someone's going to mention Sean and people go like,
who?
Right? It's like, they'll move on without us. As they should.
Yes.
As they should. Hey, mm-hmm. Let's go back. You mentioned something before we got rolling here. You know, we've done a lot of therapy. We've done a lot of counseling.
Yes.
Everybody needs counseling. don't say, I don't. Yes, you do. Yeah. You're long overdue, as a matter of fact. But one of the things that like, let's kind of land it with this.
Okay.
Some big aha moments through that like mine is, this is not my church. It's God's. Control is an illusion.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's Jesus and Robin and I.
Yeah.
That's right.
It.
That's really,
that's
and,
it.
My, and so like we, before we start rolling here, we were talking about some of the energy that we've carried in the past towards people who wronged us or hurt us or whatever that is. And you started to tell a story and I went, hey, wait,
yeah,
save
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's so get
you're,
it rolling.
Yeah. So you're sitting down early on, I think when you're in that inpatient thing.
And, first counselor I met with.
Yeah.
And I'm so.
He's like 150 years old, right?
He's like 150. I'm such a wreck that I'm supposed to be there by myself, but I can't function without Jill with me. I'm like a little kid. So they ended up letting me rent a house just outside of where all the housing is. And so that my wife could be with me because I was like an infant.
You
all
are crazy.
Yeah. I'm crazy. Yeah. And so, so we're sitting at this dining room table and this guy comes over and it's the first meeting. I'm still like barely not having panic attacks at the moment. I start telling him about all my panic attacks and the depression. And he asked me about growing up. And I start telling him, you know, my sad story. We've all got one. And he goes, okay. Gets out a pencil, gets out a little piece of paper. He had this little bitty notebook and he goes, let's make a list of your grievances. I went, what? I was like getting angry. I'm like, do you not see the condition I'm in? I don't want to talk about my grievances with the, some of the people I just mentioned. I have anxiety. I have a lot of depression. He goes, I know. And he said something I'll never forget. Jimmy goes, do you know how much anxiety producing energy it takes for you to hold on to that grievance? It takes for you to hold on to that unforgiveness. He's like, it's killing you. And so I met with this guy
twice
a week.
And you disconnected all that. That didn't have anything to do with this, right?
In fact, I had grown up thinking the stuff that happened to me as a kid or growing up, that's back there. I'm a man. Like, shame on me if it still affects me, is how I honestly felt. And so I most days just pretended that the stuff in the past never happened. And on the days that I couldn't pretend because it would pop in my mind, then I would be like, well, shame on me if that still affects me, because like, get past it, bro. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think it had anything to do with anything. And I spent 7 weeks meeting with this guy twice a week. And most of our sessions were going down the road of feeling past hurts. Cause I wouldn't allow myself to feel them. He's like, you can't forgive it till you feel it. Let's acknowledge that it hurt. Let's acknowledge how it changed the course of your life. Let's acknowledge what it's done ever since it happened. Let's feel it so that we can face it. And then you can forgive it and you can start to experience. And so, man, it was a journey. And I had no idea how much, I mean, that was just a part. It was a lane, but it was huge for me to do work like that.
Yeah. So two things, wrap this up, all right? I could go all day.
All day.
I love talking to you, listening to you. So I think we live under the illusion sometimes that, okay, we work through our grievance, right? And now it's dealt with. I killed it, put it to death. Mm-hmm. Right? I find that it still tries to raise its head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the old stuff that used to trigger, the old stuff that used to spin you out, still tries.
Mm-hmm.
What tools, what... I mean, you had some great points in here. Like you built an army. You have, mm-hmm. you use worship as a weapon. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great stuff in there, right? So when the comparison thing comes up,
yeah.
When the, hey, your numbers are down a little bit, or mm-hmm. hey.
And oh, aren't they?
Yeah. right. But we're not trying to rebuild. We're building something new.
Come on.
Right. So when those voices start going in your head, because mm-hmm. they're never going away.
No.
This side of heaven, right? Mm-hmm. What are you doing differently now so you don't end up on the side of an interstate? Because if we let our guard down, right?
Yeah.
I think we're naive to think that we won't get attacked again.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So what's different now, right? That you're able to face that.
Such
now
a good question. I feel like I've learned a truckload of stuff.
Sure.
One of the big things that's different now is I'm not hiding it. There's so much freedom in not hiding it.
Absolutely.
And I could go through a process like this, write a book on it and go, conquered, done, over it. I'm not.
Okay.
In fact, that's one of the reasons I didn't want to write the book. Cause I'm like, what if I still deal with anxiety and depression? And now I just wrote a book about how to deal with anxiety and depression, and what a hypocrite that dude is. Mm. So I don't hide it. Instantly, I have some people, some friends, my wife. So there's some people that instantly I'll call and text and say, my thoughts are spiraling today. And it's amazing how just doing that, having somebody pray with you, then I got four or five people all of a sudden that same day, they're sending me a verse going, hey, remember the truth today. Don't let Satan lie to you. Mm-hmm. You're not where you used to be. You're not perfect, but you're not where you used to be. Don't let that thought gets to stop today. I think that's one of the biggest things I'm doing now that I wouldn't do then, because I was so afraid of what might happen if people knew.
Yeah. When I find when I say, I'm just going to push that down, it gives it more power.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say, even through a text, hey, Sean, thinking about this today, just mm-hmm. need a prayer.
Yep.
Somehow it loses some power.
It does.
I'm not the psychology degree. I don't have a mm-hmm. Bible verse,
No, it does
to bring
though.
Yourself into the light, but, all right, so here's what I think is going to happen, right?
Okay.
There's going to be a bunch of people out there going to listen to this. Mm-hmm. I mean, tens and tens.
Come on.
Dozens. Anyway, all right. And they're sitting there in their car. They're sitting there in their office, whatever, and they're just going to wrap up. And they're like,
they know it's right.
Mm-hmm.
They know what you're saying. It's like, yeah, me too. I feel mm-hmm. that. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And between here and their car, they're going to make choices and decisions about what they're going to do about this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you could, if you had an elevator ride from the third floor to the lobby to leave them with one thing.
Yes.
And then you're going to walk away and they're going to go make their decision.
Yes.
Based on everything God's been teaching.
Yes.
You. And you might've already said it. So just restate it. Right. Hey, the one thing I want you to know, if you're dealing with, you know, anxiety and depression and fear and like panic,
right?
Here's the one thing that's helped me look into it. You know, that, that type of thing.
I think, man,
I'm pushing the button.
I want to say so much.
Yeah.
You don't believe the lie. The lie is I'm always going to be this way. I never get better. It's just my lot in life and I just have to accept it. And I just don't believe that's true. I do think there's some things that you and me and you will have to start doing to enter this battle, but it's a battle you can win. And it starts with just, I got to stop hiding it. And when you start opening up is when you get to start going, what kind of help do I need? I may need some counseling because maybe I've been through some stuff. I may need some therapy. I may need to talk to a good doctor about some medication for a while. I might need that. I might need to go start stepping into God's presence a little bit more than I have and not seeing it as a chore like I used to, but just an opportunity to let him give me some peace today because I just need that. But I think the biggest lie I was believing was I'm always going to be this way and there's nothing I can do about it. Mm. And what I believe now is that's absolutely not true. And Romans 15, 13 has been like the staple verse for me. May the God of hope fill you with all peace and joy as you trust in him. But what I love about that verse is it ends with not because of your strength, not because you're going to get stronger and figure it out, but because the Holy Spirit's going to work through you. His power is going to show up and help you get through this.
Yeah. I couldn't say any better. It was a good elevator ride.
Come on.
Hey, thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk soon.
Bye.